Coming soon. A playlist original.
Coming soon to 4K Blu-ray. A playlist original. This is the Films at Home podcast, your source for everything home entertainment.
Hey everyone, Jeff here from Films at Home. Thanks for coming back to the channel today for this special summer episode of the podcast. Now, I was taking a break for the summer on the podcast, but with all the recent news on the WGA and SAG after strikes out in Hollywood, I had to get something out on this topic and hopefully explain sort of what's going on to my audience and give you a unique perspective into the strike with a member of the WGA. So if you don't know what's been going on, basically Hollywood's on strike right now. The Writers Guild and the Screen Actors Guild are all on strike. They have been for Writers Guild over 100 days, SAG-AFTRA, I think coming up on 100 days at this point. And it's been a long-term thing. And the studios are just not playing ball right now, basically. There have been some deals back and forth, but no significant progress really to date. So this thing could go on for a while. I hope it doesn't. I hope the writers and the screen actors and everybody involved and visual effects artists who are getting into unions, and we'll talk about all this, but I hope everybody gets what they deserve as a creative person who drives this industry. But this may go on for a while. And so today's guest is Ted Sullivan. And Ted is a writer. He's a producer. He's been in Hollywood for quite a few years. He's written on shows you may know like Riverdale. He wrote for Star Trek Discovery. He wrote for Pure Genius. He wrote for Revenge. He wrote for Supergirl. He wrote for a lot of different shows, network shows, Netflix shows. So he has a real good idea of, you know, what a working writer's real experiences in this industry. And he's going to talk in depth about what's going on in the industry, his thoughts on it, you know, how unionizing can help not only this industry, but a lot of others, sort of the main problems with residuals and how writers are being paid and how actors are being paid, you know, just making a living wage, all the different sort of intricacies that are behind the strike, AI, everything. And also, interestingly enough, how this relates to content creators, because there's been a lot of discussion about this online as a content creator, like, should you talk about this stuff or not? And he has a really unique perspective on it. But I wanted to get this out there because, as you probably know, I fully support the creative people behind this, the WGA, SAG-AFTRA. I support everybody who's going to go on strike to get themselves a livable wage and decent benefits like health insurance, you know, the bare minimums, literally, that people need to live, a living wage and some health care. Like, they're not asking for much. And if you look at the numbers, they're asking for a tiny, tiny percentage of these studios' profits. And Ted will get into all of this and explain it much better than I can, but we had a really interesting conversation. I think you'll really enjoy it. It starts with a little bit of a mini rant from Ted, but I let him go because he had a lot of good things to say, and then it gets a little more conversational. So sit back, relax, enjoy this episode. Let me know what you think at the end, and I'll talk to you guys at the end of the interview.
My name's Ted Sullivan. I've been a writer and producer in television for the past probably 15 years or so. And I've done a wide variety of shows from Law and Order Criminal Intent to Revenge to Supergirl to Star Trek Discovery to Riverdale and a lot of stuff in between. I started my career in soap opera and I am an active and vocal member of the WGA, the Writers Guild of America. And we are currently on strike, and tomorrow will be the 100th day. And also, if I can just say, I'm a huge fan of your channel. You have made me appreciate physical media in a way that I didn't appreciate it before. Not only, I think I fell for the ease of streaming without understanding the pluses of physical media. And not only are you getting a far less compressed version of the movie, so it's going to look and sound infinitely better, but you're able to see movies on physical media that don't exist on streaming in a lot of cases, because the executives in charge of what they put on streaming make decisions based off of whatever their numbers tell them. Which is why I got a non-region 4K player, because I want to see movies from China and Australia, Japan, Hong Kong, Korea, mm-hmm. and often those streamers won't carry them. Or right. if they do, they suddenly delete them without any notice, and then you're out of luck. Or just as egregiously, they re-edit movies or modify them.
Right.
You know, William Friedkin just passed away. He wrote, he made one of the great movies of The French Connection recently, and they cut some dialogue because of racial slurs in them. But that was the whole point of the movie. William Friedkin was saying these aren't heroes, and modifying his movies out of some knee-jerk reaction by executives who don't understand story or character or theme is really dangerous, I think. So in a very real sense, physical media protects the audience from the worst instincts of modern-day Hollywood executives who only think about profitability. And look, I understand show business has always been about both business and entertainment. The struggle between the two is what gives us some of the best art that's ever existed. But when that balance is erased and completely, all we have left is business without any of the art, and then it's mindless content or worse, commercials, which is why we end up seeing movies like featuring mid-level executives about products like Air or Tetris or BlackBerry or that Cheetos movie. No wonder the executives want to tell those stories because those stories are about them. These guys would watch Network and think Paddy Chayefsky was telling an uplifting story about news, turning news divisions into profit-generating machines. That's not the point, guys. And that's only part of the reason why both the WGA and SAG are literally fighting for the sustainability of the industry. And I think you're going to see other guilds, IATSE and Teamsters, really 399, they're having the same issues. And we're facing a unique time that has created a convergence of issues that has led to the standoff with the studios, but not only in Hollywood, but in all industries. One is the corporate culture has changed. Studios are no longer studios. They're subdivisions of massive corporate conglomerates due to mega mergers. So Disney buying Fox, which was a deal that should never have been allowed by the government, means over 50% of all writers working today, or when we are working, work for one company. That's a very dangerous thing. And with these mergers and the corporate behavior that has eroded worker rights across all industries, it's hurting all of the workers and rewarding executives, and they have, you know, they just keep paying themselves higher and higher salaries and repressing worker rights. That's why unions are so important and why they're trying to undermine our unions and pit us against each other. And we know all of this because in 1 month they've lost – in the first month of the strike, they lost all the money we were asking over 3 years. So this isn't about money. This is about union busting. That's pure and simple. The second issue that we've been dealing with is post-pandemic. And the pandemic affected things in a very, very real way, not only in driving the streaming industry, but we make a new deal with the AMPTP, which is, you know, the studios and producers. We make a new deal every 3 years. And we do this for a very specific reason. And it's a reason I did not fully understand when I first joined the guild. And I actually resented it. But our former president, David Goodman, explained to me why we do that. And it's because technology and distribution changes so quickly. When TV came along, then there were reruns and movies on TV. Then there was cable and VHS and DVD and Blu-ray and now streaming. With each new development, we need to carve out coverage and compensation for our members. They do not freely offer that. We have to force them to profit share with the artists who create the media that they profit from. But in 2020, when we were supposed to renegotiate, we did not. Because millions of people were dying. We said we would hold off for 3 more years, hopefully, when things settled down. And they used our humanity against us. The industry doesn't look at all like it did 6 years ago. There was no streaming like there is today. And they claim they're not making money. They're losing money. Mm-hmm. But we know that's a lie. They said the same thing about TV reruns and VHS and DVDs. And then it turned out, when we forced them to open the books, they were making huge profits. And the same is true here. And how do we know that? Because the streamers are not loss leaders. They're not money pits. because they tell their shareholders, they brag about their massive profits. They only have to be truthful to one group of people, and it's not the writers or the actors, it's their shareholders. Because if they're not, they're breaking the law, literally. So we know they're lying, which is why we're fighting so hard. And the third factor is we're fighting Silicon Valley. They infect and destroy every industry they touch. Amazon destroyed the publishing industry. Google destroyed newspapers. Uber destroyed taxis. Airbnb, Zillow, Redfin destroyed the rental and housing market. The list goes on and on. And they want to do the same thing to us. They want to turn us into gig workers who will punch up a script that's generated by AI to make it sound human. And you'll get a day rate, maybe like $300 a day, and spend the rest of the week or month or year hoping you'll get another ding on your app to punch up another script. That's not a way to sustain an industry. They broke the industry, and what we're trying to do is save it. I mean, even the very nature of what they call what we do is insulting. They call it content instead of movies or TV, because right. That's all they see it as. Content is a home video you upload on YouTube of a guy getting hit in the nuts by a wiffle ball.
No.
But what you do is you actually, you do reviews. You bring up points. You bring attention to movies that you look. I think some of the movies that you've talked about, I get really excited that you're talking about them. Not just horror movies, but you dive deep into Criterion and you help illuminate people and drive them to movies that they might not have ever heard of or seen. That's great. That's more than content. You are doing an actual show. Content is someone getting hit in the balls. That's it.
America's funniest home videos.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what content is. A story has character and arcs and themes and direction and writing and costume design. It has a point. It's something that exists to enlighten or illuminate. It's not content. And the very term is derogatory and shows what the executives think of what we do. So we're really wrestling against that. And when you see things as only content, it's very easy to just dismiss it. That's why, you know, streamers in Silicon Valley work on this model that has grown out of websites. Was, you know, it used to be you created a website, you had a phone number and an address, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, then they realized, like, if you update your site and you put new things on it, well, people will start to come to it every day. And that's what they're doing with the streamers. You like this show? Well, here it is. We drop it all in one day. So even huge shows, right? Like people talk about, you know, that one on Netflix, The Stranger Things.
Yep.
That comes out 3 days late. 3 days later, everyone's watching it and the conversation is over. It's gone. Yep. And they go, it doesn't matter. We got another one that's coming and another one and another one. And suddenly that, so now you're on this train that you can't stop creating content. That devalues the art that you're creating and also kills the lifespan of the art. Consume and discard. It's a non-sustainable business model that has just taken over every industry. And it's why every industry is facing, you know, worker oppression and starting to push back against this. That's the true smoke and mirrors behavior that's rife throughout Silicon Valley. They promise the next iPhone without inventing one or even having a Steve Jobs at the head. You know, they always claim they're on the verge of making money, right? We just need a new influx of cash. Like Uber's never made money and they won't until someone invents self-driving cars, right? Mm-hmm. But until then, they repress the worker rights and they work people to death. They cheat them out of money. And then at the end of the day, they pay themselves huge dividends and stock options and salaries. And finally, I think the whole world has started to catch on to this absolutely unrealistic business model and said enough is enough, which is why things are so different now in this strike than it was in 2007. In 2007, all the other unions were angry at us. The people on the street were angry at us. Now we get truck drivers driving by honking and say, go get it. because they're going to do the same thing. So I think, and it's also really frustrating because a lot of these companies are crushing worker rights. They pay off local and federal politicians to get outrageous and unfair tax loopholes. They often pay no taxes, yet use our infrastructure that we, our taxes pay for. And then instead of paying the workers who actually do the job, they pay themselves huge salaries, and no one has ever questioned it until now. And so I think we're at a turning point now in every line of work. I think I think we're just, because actors are on strike. I mean, I've had a lot of cousins and family members text me and go, when the day the actors went on strike, I said, did you go on strike? I said, yeah, we've been on strike for 79 days, brother. but yeah, now that George Clooney's on strike, people are noticing. But that's fine. It gets the message out there, and hopefully it will inspire others. Like, you can see what's happening with the visual effects artists that just decided to unionize.
Smart move by them, I think. They need that badly.
Absolutely. I know a lot. I've worked with a lot. I'm friends with a lot. They have been overworked and underpaid since the 1970s. They've never been allowed to unionize. And they finally just asked IATSE, which is the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees, to accept them into their union. So they've had enough. They've seen how Kevin Feige and Kathleen Kennedy and the top executives at Disney have monetized their work while they suffer. And enough is enough. I'm proud of them and excited for this movement to expand. Not just, I mean, look at what the UPS workers were able to get. Mm-hmm. You know, and the Teamsters. That's fantastic. We need more and more of this, because right now we've fallen all the way back to 1923, and we're just repeating history. And we have to push back on that, because the rest of us barely scrape by. I'm not in a big house. I'm in a 2-bedroom apartment that I can barely pay rent. Because of the new business model, we had a system that wasn't perfect but worked, that you could have a career, and they broke it. And what we're trying to do is literally fight for the sustainability of the industry. That's why we're doing it, and I hope that's why every industry starts to do that.
Yeah, no, I'm with you, and I feel that. Like I mean, I just work regular whatever corporate marketing job. Well, there's a couple things. The content thing's very real. Everybody just, I'm a marketing guy. I get that. What they're doing at Disney is what we do with our blogs, right? It's just make sure you have a social post every day. Make sure you have a blog post every day. And my God, am I glad that there is entertainment that exists outside of those blog posts. But it is getting to that point. And I've always wondered, I've been talking about this for a while, like, the burnout of the viewer, and I'm there with the Disney stuff and the Marvel stuff. And I haven't watched a show since WandaVision. I didn't watch the last season of Mandalorian. I love Star Wars, and I can't even get into that stuff anymore because it's just content to keep me subscribed. It's just to keep me coming back. They stretch stretch what should have been an hour worth of storytelling into, 8 hours, and it's only going to get worse and worse and worse with these AI things. And like, it blows my mind that it even has lasted as long as it did. But I guess when people were home and we literally had no other options, we just took what we could get. And that's why I'm so happy to see, like, you know, the people returning to theaters and everything in that. In physical media, I think, you know, this is where I've asked some actors this, and I think this is probably true for everybody in the world. But like, if you remove that and you're only getting streaming and digital purchases, I mean, where are the residuals coming from? I mean, I've seen people, major shows, guys who are on The Office who, you know, not Steve Carell, but they were in 50 episodes of The Office. The guy who played Roy, you know, getting checks for $5. And I'm like, that was the biggest show on Netflix for half a decade. Yep. I mean, billions of views that must have got. And if that's on TBS in 1995,
yes,
he's making a good living.
Yes.
And that's all $5.
And this is something that people outside of the industry don't quite understand the idea of residuals. And actually, the fact that you brought this up, I think, is a really important one that is really driving the SAG issue. I'm not an actor, but look, I have a ton of actor friends, and I empathize with how hard they are struggling. Because what the studios have recently done are two really insidious things. One is they created a new category for casting guest stars, which is called top of show, which is just like $5,000. So you do an episode and you get $5,000. Now, someone might say, hey, that sounds great. Well, in order to make healthcare in SAG, you have to make something like $42,000. Mm-hmm. So what you used to get paid was, you know, $15,000, $20,000 for a guest star, right? Now you get $5,000. Also, you've got taxes, agent, manager, and lawyer.
Right.
Though that's 30% plus 10% plus 10% plus 5% out the door. You're left with nothing. Okay. In the past, if you got three or four guest stars a year, you could make your living. You could make your minimum to stay active in SAG and get your health care. When you're making $5,000 for three episodes, that's $15,000 a year. After all the other fees you have to pay to all the people who handle you, what do you walk away with $6,000? That's insane. You can't make a living doing that. Yeah. And then the other thing that they've done is they do a one-time buyout. They mask that fee, that low rate, by saying, oh, we'll give you a one-time buyout for your residuals for something like $10,000. So that sounds like, oh, great. Now I'm getting $15,000. Except what you normally would get was $120,000 over, you know, a 20-year period. And that was a deal that we made with the studios in order to make the system work, right? We put off some of our pay in order to profit share with the show if it was profitable. Well, now they're keeping all of that money for a one-time buyout, because on the surface it seems like, oh, I got $10,000. Except you just handed over to the studios $110,000. And right. That money was something that was supposed to help you for retirement or to fill out the lean periods when you don't get a job. That's why we abdicated some of our money up front, because we were profit sharing on the other side. If they take away that and pay us less, how is that fair or even humane? It destroys the sustainability of the industry. People can't make a living. If they can't make a living in it, they won't work in it anymore, and they certainly won't give their best work. So they're destroying the very thing that draws people to it in order to make the stuff that we dreamt of doing it when we were a kid. No one dreams of growing up and being an accountant. No one dreams of growing up and being a dentist, mate, probably, but they did dream of being, you know, a wardrobe designer. They did dream of being a sound mixer. They did dream of being a writer and an actor and a director, all those things. And they're capitalizing on the fact that we grew up with those dreams, and they're saying, well, you should be happy that you just get to do that.
But to do it, yeah.
How is anyone happy when they can't pay their rent, when they can't do any of that stuff? It's brutal, and it's painful, and it's inhumane. And again, just said enough is enough.
What is their end game? I mean, is it just remove the human element?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. You mentioned AI. I think, first of all, we need to stop calling AI artificial intelligence. It's not. That's a term that was created by Silicon Valley to make their program.
Yeah, it's a few steps away from that.
Oh, not only is it a few steps away, what it really is, it's a plagiarism software. It takes pre-existing work and repackages it. Right. So it's just like everything that Silicon Valley does, right? Oh, this isn't a taxi, this is Uber. No, it's just a taxi, but it's not
driven by somebody without any benefits or union.
Yeah, exactly. So it takes someone else's idea, someone else's art, and uses it without their permission, and then makes money off of it, and cuts the artists who did the work and created the work and never agreed to allow their work to be reused. So that, to me, is one thing that either is going to collapse because, like VR, remember when VR was going to change the world and Meta, the metaverse was going to change the world, and then everyone went, we don't want it. With AI, I do believe it's garbage, and I do believe it probably will implode. But one thing that would really help it implode is if some lawyers got involved and said, my client did not agree to have their work used by you and not get compensated. And that can really have an impact. But I do think what they're trying to do is just, they never had a mother, clearly, who read them the story, the fairy tale about the goose that laid the golden egg. Because every one of them are cutting open the goose thinking it's filled with gold. And what's inside the goose is a dead goose. So like, that's what they do in every industry they touch. We have to make sure that they stop doing that. And we also have to stop worshiping and promoting and idolizing billionaires. There's no such thing as a good billionaire, especially in a world with such great inequity. You know, and the very fact that the media trips over themselves over thinking they've discovered the next Mark Zuckerberg, which, by the way, who wants another one of those? But well, beyond that, like,
half of them end up in jail anyway.
Exactly. So, like, why are we, like, idolizing these people? They're awful sociopaths who keep everything for themselves and hurt everyone around them. This is not the people that we should have running industry or politics or anything. We should ship them to an island and let them just eat each other. That's what really should happen. But in lieu of that, we just need to fight back and tell them this is not okay. Mm. And they hide behind capitalism, and they hide behind nationalism, and they hide behind all of those things. But at the very core of it, they're all selfish sociopaths. Yeah. So I think their end game... I think we're giving them too much credit to think of an end game. I mean, we have a Warner Brother executive. We have David Zaslav bragging that they saved $100 million this quarter. Well, they saved $100 million by not making anything, by not doing the very thing their company exists to do.
I saw that quote, and that was the most – I thought that was so short-sighted because I was like, well, great, you saved $100 million, but what happens in 12 months when you have – nothing in theaters and nothing to put on Max, nothing to put anywhere. I mean, and I think, I don't know if it was him or Bob Iger, somebody made the comment that it sounded like their end game was like, wait until everybody starves and has to go back to work, and then they'll come back to work, which is a pretty horrible, insidious, really nasty thing to say. And to say in public, I was like, wow, the balls on this guy to even put that out there. Like, those are the things maybe keep those in the back of your head, sociopath, but he couldn't. He said them out loud.
Because they don't know that the quiet part is not the part that they're not supposed to say out loud. Right. Because if they only exist in a bubble with other executives and other CEOs, everyone thinks they're the hardest working people and that they're the one that are being oppressed.
Right.
Everyone always does. That's why it's very important to get outside of your bubble and to interact with people who don't just agree with you.
Absolutely.
It's really important to test yourself that way. So I think it's giving them too much credit to think of an end game other than just the next quarter and what's the stock price that day. I really hope we start to do as two guilds and hopefully other guilds that will join us is start to focus on the board members. These board members are the ones who the CEOs answer to. They're often put into a position because they're celebrities or they're, you know, an important person. These people hide in the shadows because no one really knows who's on the board. But if we start to say to the board members, why are you allowing the CEO to do this to their workers? Why are you allowing this to do this to the company? It's hurting the company. That maybe that can put some pressure on them. Because honestly, I don't believe these CEOs have any empathy. They had a meeting on Friday with us. They announced, we're having a meeting with you on Friday to basically say to us, we're not going to give you anything. So it's like, it was just a psychological warfare to get us excited on a Friday so that we'd be, our weekends would be ruined and to crush our spirit. Yeah. They cut down trees. They rip up sidewalks and we have no place to walk. We have no shade. It's insane. This is something out of David Copperfield. This is something Charles Dickens would write. This is not something that humans should do to each other.
And there's something that they're so, that comes up to me. They're so self-absorbed that they were like, Well, we'll just get that out in the news just so that I maintain my name in the news.
Absolutely.
And we have nothing to actually talk about or anything to bring to the table. Just like, you know, hey, remember us. Like,
well, and also to say to their shareholders, well, we tried.
We tried.
We right. met with them. And you know, my big wish is I personally hope the more traditional studios make a deal with us so we can tell Netflix and Amazon and Apple to go away. They weren't here a few years ago. We don't need them or their corrupt or inhumane business models to destroy our industry like they've destroyed every other one they've infiltrated. They're locusts. We need to stop them. That's why we fight.
They're the big, I mean, because I hear a lot, you hear a lot when people are, I mean, rightfully, I don't want to call it complaining because it's all rightfully so. But it's Iger and Zaslav and, you know, Warner, Disney. So, I mean, are the real problem children, though, the Netflix, the Apple, the Amazon, I guess Hulu's part of Disney, but that whole side of the business?
Those three companies changed everything, in my opinion. You know, and I think they brought that Silicon Valley ideology to Hollywood in a way that it wasn't there before. And look, Hollywood has a lot to work on. We've done a terrible job in giving a voice to marginalized artists, from groups that have been marginalized throughout history. It's slowly changing, but it has a long way to go. But it was an industry where you could make a living, and it's not anymore, unless you are, you know, one of the mega Marvel superstar actors or one of the mega showrunners, you know, like, or one of the mega directors, like Christopher Nolan probably doesn't ever worry about if he's going to work again or not. But the rank and file directors do, the rank and file actors do, the rank and file writers do. And I think a society is supposed to take care of those people, not the richest, the most powerful.
So do you think, what it sounds like to me is that your Warner, your Paramount, your Disney, everybody's trying to emulate what.
Yes, they were chasing.
Guys were doing, and so you brought in leadership and executives who could try to do that versus just focusing on 100 years, like Warner Brothers, 100 years of making great,
incredible movies
and amazing history.
Yes,
and it feels like they want some of that when they do, you know, this, and they put the 100th anniversary on their but then it feels like, you know, but it's max, everything. It feels like there's almost some people at Warner Brothers proper, traditional Warner Brothers, that probably are in the right mindset, but they're getting just pressured from the top to just do everything the Apple Netflix way.
Jeff, I feel really sad for the good executives out there, because there are good executives. I feel badly for the executives who got involved in telling stories. It used to be that you could talk to an executive about story and theme. You could talk to an executive. You would have arguments. You'd hash things out. And they're still out there. But they're surrounded by all these new business executives and Silicon Valley executives who have – they don't know who any of these classic movies are,
or even, and they don't care to either.
and you don't even have to go back to to Casablanca or Citizen Kane. You don't even, or Dog Day Afternoon. They don't know movies like from 10 years ago.
Right.
And they don't even know how movies and TV shows are made. I've had executives say to me in sound mixes recently, or somewhat recently, who have never been on a set, who don't know anything, that we were doing a sound mix and they said, oh, can we cut that shot out? And the post supervisor, she said, no, that's not what we do here. This is a picture lock. We're doing a sound mix here. They just don't understand the process and they don't even have enough self-awareness to be embarrassed or to change or to learn. And that's the worst part. So I really, really hope that this will ultimately drive some of those executives away and allow the really good ones. And there are good ones. And there are the ones that take that know story and want to tell a good story or want to tell, make a great TV show or movie. And those people, I really feel sad for because they're in the lion's den and they have to pretend to be a lion.
And it's happening everywhere too. I've seen it in my own career as recently as like right now, where you have the passionate people, the executives, people that workers really like, who are passionate about the company or the product, and they're being pushed out now for revenue or for somebody who doesn't know product, but has a flashy resume and could care less. And, you know, and here come the layoffs and everything else. And we're going to start walking people out the door. And, you know, I feel like I've seen this cycle and those people fail. And then it goes back to, you know, hopefully it comes back full circle and you put somebody in charge. I mean, there've been movies made about this. You put the cutthroat executive in charge and the business fails. And then like somebody like Adam Sandler will come in and run the company and save it, or Chris Farley, or these are movies. This is what happens, and it's happening. Feels like right now, but it's not just like you said. I've seen it everywhere, and I keep talking to people too. Like, where is the breaking point? Like, where? And I won't like I make good money. I have a house, family, but if my parents had the money that I was, they would be so much more comfortable,
right?
And feel more secure and not as anxious and nervous, and things just cost so much. And you feel like you can't get ahead. And I feel like I can't get ahead and I feel like I'm doing well. Mm-hmm. How does somebody who is not doing well feel? And I just go, where's the breaking point? We have the numbers. There are hundreds of millions of us. There is one of them at each company. So where's the breaking point where everybody just says, enough is enough. I'm tired of paying $5,000 a month for my health insurance, just trying to keep my kids healthy. I'm tired of paying $1,000 a month for a car just to get back and forth to work. Like, there's a breaking point. It feels like it's coming like soon. Like now.
I agree. And I think it's time. And look, I think we got too comfortable. I think we took our eye off the ball, all of us, me included. Yeah. And then you're the frog in the slowly boiling water. And then finally you look around and go, oh, this water is hot.
Yeah.
And why are they outside the pot? Why am I in the pot? And that's where we're at right now. And certainly where we are as an industry. And so I'm proud of what we're doing. It's hard. Tomorrow will be 100 days. And it theoretically could go for another 100 days. I hope it doesn't. It will be really painful and will hurt me a lot too, just on a personal level. But man, I'm scared, but I'm unwavering in my commitment to what we have to do. And I'm super proud of both SAG and the WGA. And I'm super proud of the other unions that have been standing with us and will probably do the exact same thing. And I hope they do, and they deserve it.
What do you think?
And I hope other industries do too.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, so I mean, I hope this doesn't go another 100 days, but it doesn't seem out of the realm of possibility with the way that they're talking right now. So, I mean, you go another 100 days, you're talking about 200 days into this thing. Mm-hmm. We're talking about 2/3 of a year. My math is terrible. Just over half of a year of no writers, you know, just a small amount shorter than that of time, but no actors. Mm-hmm. I mean, what's the impact 2 years from now? I mean, are we going to have months where there's just and outside it, like, okay, so you've got you've got A24 and you've got Independence, but I mean, are there going to be months where it's like, that's the only thing in theaters on TV? Cause I'm hearing like, now we're talking reality shows and writers and people on those shows who are, you know, just paid pennies.
Nothing.
Nothing. So that goes, movies go, TV shows go. I mean, do you think they're already starting to try to hire the scabs and trying to get these people? Or are they just sitting back and going, well, it is what it is. In summer of 2025, we're just going to be pretty much a dead zone.
I don't think
that's a scary thing for fans. That's all. I want you guys to win, but I'm like, man, as a fan, and I know you're a movie fan. I mean, this just movies and TV. Like, imagine a summer without. I mean, that would suck without anything.
Oh, 100%.
Hasn't happened in 100 years.
I know. So I don't think they're thinking that far ahead. I do think at some point their shareholders are going to say, hey, what, you know, the only thing they're going to respond to is stock going down, price going down. Mm. That's it.
So, which I'm surprised has not gone down.
Well, it's because Wall Street has the same type of short-sighted behavior now.
Yeah.
Like you see a company comes out and exceeds expectation and their stock price goes down. their company lays off 15,000 workers, their stock goes up. Yeah. To me, that's just, we're living in an upside down world. So I think we, as a culture, have to take a step back and go, who are we listening to? That's a larger conversation. But after a while, I hope that conversation starts to take root and people start to go like, yeah, wait a second. Why are we letting these guys destroy everything? Mm. So I don't think they're thinking that far ahead. We are. We are, yeah, I mean, and we keep yelling it from the hills, but it will take some time. Just like with climate change, it takes a long time to get people to kind of recognize, like, why is it so hot? Why is it 104 degrees every day this month?
You literally have to be the boiling frog.
Exactly.
Before people But I mean, so in the meantime, and I don't know the answer, are you and others, like, are you working on passion projects and writing things, or are you just, it's pens down, period, whether it's companies or not.
I was writing for free for most of my life.
Yeah.
When I was 6 years old, I was writing comic books. When I was 10 years old, I was making short films. When I was 15 years old, I started a theater company and put on plays that I wrote. So I've been writing for free way longer than I've been paid. So absolutely. If you look around my apartment, there are cards all over the place of me structuring a new pilot, a new movie. Like, I'm writing all the time because these are the things that I haven't had the time to write. So I'm going to write them and they're mine. Are they going to get made? No idea. I have no idea because they're not based on IP. And that seems to be the only thing these guys want to make. But for me, they're ideas in my head. They're characters in my head. They're people that I know and have lived with. And I need to get them out of my head and on a page and then start to work them. And a lot of my friends are doing the same thing because what we are writers. Mm-hmm. That's what we are.
I wish you were working, but I kind of love that because I think some really cool stuff could come up. Like you're not just you, but everybody's able to sit down and you don't have the job in front of you. You're able to sort of just write these passion projects, put down ideas. I mean, it could, out of all the bad, hopefully you get this fixed. Everyone's paid a living wage and all that gets fixed. But maybe there could be some good creativity-wise as a writer.
It's what the 70s were, right?
To have 70s, the time, yeah.
The 70s were like studio movies imploded. No one wanted to go see them. Everyone was watching TV. And then suddenly we ended up with Dog Day Afternoon and The Godfather.
I'm all for that, a little renaissance where – because, I mean, and that's the thing is like you get the occasional – original movie, and it's funny because they usually tend to do pretty well.
Yeah,
and an original new TV show that's not big. I mean, those are the ones that blow up, but then they beat them into the ground because in Barbie is like, I guess, bad example, but like because it's very. I mean, it's a brand. It's capitalism to a T. But the way they did that movie was actually pretty interesting.
Yes,
and original. But now you hear they saw the green light and now it's okay. We have a Rock'em Sock'em Robots movie. We have a Magic 8-Ball movie. We have a Polly Pocket movie. And it's like, okay, so in 2 years, we are going to dread that the Barbie movie ever did so well. And that was an original idea because they're going to smash the rest of this into the ground.
They announced they're making a Hot Wheels movie.
Right.
Isn't that Fast and the Furious? Like, what is a Hot Wheels movie? It's just cars. They weren't even different cars. They were just like, oh, that's a Trans Am. Like, what?
And that's what sucks is it's like, and if somebody makes a good, even somebody makes a good Star Wars movie that's outside the like Rogue One that I really, really like because somebody took a shot. Well, then now we're just going to try to replicate that time over time. And if you try to replicate the magic, it's never the same as the magic that was there the first attempt from somebody being an original creative. You can't just tell somebody, go write Dog Day Afternoon, because it will suck.
Right.
It will be terrible.
And look, I think this is a boon for you guys. Look, you're not in the Writers Guild. You're not in SAG. You're not covered by any of these guilds. So I love the fact that you're out there and you are pushing people. Like you do. I watch your channel and you really pick movies that sometimes, especially when I first started watching you, surprised me. Like I was like, oh, this guy's going to just be about like Halloween movies and all that. No, like you really go deep and you talk about some films that you made me go look at that mm-hmm. I was like really blown away by. That's why I watch you every week. And I'm super excited to have you out there. I know that sometimes there's people outside of the industry who are like, oh, you shouldn't do anything. Look, I'm not promoting anything because I'm in the guild and they tell us not to promote. You're not in the guild. If you're doing something and you love movies and you're keeping that conversation live, that's great. You know, I because at the core, the reason why we're striking is we love movies and TV.
Right.
You know, that and we want to protect them. And what your channel is about is protecting the movies as they were conceived and trying to get people to go revisit them. I have a whole shelf of movies that are, when people say, hey, what's a movie I should watch that I don't know or haven't seen? I have this shelf where I like choose anyone on here, because if you have seen it, you should rewatch it, but I bet you haven't seen it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of, especially younger writers who I try to be mentors to, it's astounding to me the movies that they have not seen. Astounding. And it's like, guys, this is our industry. This is this is our history. We need to know this so that we build on that and know what came before and learn and also evolve and change. So.
Well, I'm glad you brought up. So the couple more questions I want to ask. One of them was on this because half the people out there that I talk to won't talk about, and these are content creators, whatever you want to call us, influencers, which I hate that term.
Yeah.
But just these are people who love movies and talk about it online, TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, right, wherever they're at. About half of them are like, I will not talk about, you know, a Struck movie. They have gone and seen Oppenheimer. They will not give you a review on it or talk about mm-hmm. it. They will get Scream 6 in on 4K, which just came out recently. They will not cover it. The other half are sort of like, well, if nobody's supporting the artists who made these movies, and this is the way I feel, well, then studio can just point and say, you know, see, nobody's supporting the crap that they make. You know what I mean? It's nobody, right. Nobody wants this. If we don't talk about it and granted, I don't think Oppenheimer or Barbie had any issues making money, whether I talked about it or other people didn't. But there are other movies where that could potentially make or break, you know, some word of mouth from people online. And if you're, so I just want like set the record straight in your opinion. Everyone can do what they want. If you don't want to talk about the Struck work, that's fine. But are we under any strict obligation? If I write a script or I have an idea for a movie and I want to get it out there in 5 years because I talked about Oppenheimer and Barbie during the strike, I mean, am I screwed? I won't be able to be a part of anything. I need this perspective from somebody in it, and I want to just have it out there for other people because they're asking me. And I'm, because they know I talk to people, and I'm saying, you know, I really don't know either, guys. The guidelines are very murky for this type of person.
I mean, what you are right now is a reviewer, you know, like you review material, and that's what your job is. Like that's what you do. We've not asked people to, you know, there was a lot of discussion about this, but we haven't asked people to cancel their subscriptions or anything, because that also then ultimately hurts the people who are in our guild.
Right.
So and also, how do we get enough people to cancel Netflix? And like, it's a really hard thing to do. And those types of, I mean, there have been studies that show that those types of boycotts last 5 days, a week, 2 weeks, and then doesn't really have a lasting impact. I think what's more important is to use your platform to get the message out there and to say, like, what the striking writers and actors are trying to do is to ensure that we get good stuff like this out there, or that this stuff gets seen, and look at the quality. I wouldn't talk about the studios per se, but talk about the filmmakers who and the artists who make it, and why it works. And I think, to me, that's important. That also just shows the love of the product. We are not a unified people in any corner of the universe, and we're not a unified guild in any form or shape, you know, like it's, but at the end of the day, we don't cover you. So you're able to do what you want to do. And I don't see any problem with it personally, but I'm also not an official spokesperson for the guild. Sure. In my personal opinion, why would I think showing support, but also trying to bring attention from the outside looking in is a noble thing to do, because what you're doing is you're saying, this is good, and I think you should check out what these artists did.
And that is first of all, this is a big reason. I mean, I wanted to talk to you, but this is a big reason why we're talking right now is to, I'm going to put this on my channel, and I'm going to splice it up to clips and put it on TikTok and Instagram. We're going to explain like what's going on here. I want people to know this and understand it. But yeah, I'm with you. I mean, it just felt really, to me, okay, I don't need to praise the studios. I mean, and if you've watched my stuff,
that's often not the case, especially with one of them seems to be not even moving. They're moving towards no physical media.
Exactly. So, I mean, I've been hard enough on them, but yeah, I mean, I just couldn't see myself going into a spot where I was like, you know, I'm just not going to talk about the great work that literally thousands of people, and you can talk Christopher Nolan all you want, but there's thousands of people who worked on that movie.
Yeah.
Who I'm sure want to have their work appreciated, and right now are having to stay silent for good reason and not promote it. Mm-hmm. But there are people out there who can talk about it and talk about it in that context where it's like, these are the creatives who make these things happen. If you enjoy this, Warner Brothers, Disney, blah, 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 they did not make this happen.
Right.
The creatives made this happen.
Yep.
It was simply released under a banner at this point in time. There were times in the past where truly, like you said, there were executives at these places who were also making these things happen and being involved in the storytelling. But at this not that way.
By the way, you could look at one frame of a Jack Warner film and say, that's a Warner Brothers film. You could look at one frame of an MGM film back in the day with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. You could say, that's an MGM film. Right. Those studio executives had an identity. They had stars that were their stars. They had stories that were the types of stories they told. This type of picture is a Paramount picture. This type of picture is a Universal picture.
Yeah.
Doesn't exist anymore.
No, and that's the vision, even growing up. I mean, I'm only 30. I'm growing up in the 90s. But when you think Hollywood, that's the vision I have, is like,
absolutely.
You know, you're a Paramount guy. You're an MGM guy. You're a Warner guy. I mean, that's the vision I always had. And yeah, and now the sad part is now the only I can look and I can go, that's a Netflix movie.
Yeah.
You know, that's probably on Disney. That's a Disney Plus show. You can tell, because there's almost like a striking lack of any character. Like, I can immediately, and that's, I do the same thing with AI. When people post like AI art, I'm like 99.9% accurate where I'm like, that's AI junk. Nobody created that. So yeah. So one thing I think to end things off, this would be a good way to end things is, everybody knows the big movies. Everybody knows the stuff that's come out. Everybody's heard about it. I don't know how many you want to give, but I love doing this. I've done this with others on the channel. I've gone on other people's channels. A couple of movies, you know, you mentioned you get the shelf of stuff you've got to watch that people have probably not heard of. What are some recommendations you have? I've got a few that I could give. Maybe I'll change them based off of what you give if I have some thoughts, but I'd love to hear, like, right now, who are you supporting? What can we watch? What's something really cool you may not have seen?
My favorite movie of all time is a movie that is hard to find because no streamers will carry it. It's a movie called Mate One by John Sayles. Criterion has a beautiful transfer of it. It's a masterpiece, and it's near and dear to my heart. I saw it six times when I was a kid in high school. John Sayles wrote, directed, produced. He's a co-star in it. It's the first movie with Chris Cooper, Mary McDonnell. It's got James Earl Jones, an incredible performance. It's about the coal miners trying to unionize in 1920. No studio would make it, so he made it himself. No theater chain would release it, so he released it himself. It is a little known film. It is it is my favorite movie of all time. It's more timely now than ever. It is a powerful movie. I highly, highly recommend people hunting it down. Right now, the only place I know you can get it is on Criterion. Absolutely get it. There's another one I would say is In the Mood for Love, which is a Wong Kar-wai movie. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. He is on the same shelf for me as Kurosawa and Kubrick and Lynch. I think it's a perfect movie. It's one of the most you particularly will love it. Just the photography, the framing, the acting of it is superb. It's a beautiful period piece, absolutely heart wrenching. And another one I would just say that I had never heard about until a year ago, also on Criterion, called Letter Never Sent. It's a mind blowing Soviet film from 1959. It is four Russian geologists go into the Siberian wilderness to find diamonds for the government. And it is brutal, harsh, and totally Russian. It has the most incredible visuals you've ever seen, all shot on location in Siberia in 1959. How they did it, no idea. It's amazing. Absolutely incredible. The last movie, and one last one I will say, is an Australian movie called Breaker Morant. A terrific Australian film starring the legend Jack Thompson, who people will know as from Attack of the Clones. He's Uncle Owen's stepfather, I think, in that movie, in the floating wheelchair. He's incredible. Brian Brown's in it. Edward Woodward's in it. It's a Bruce Beresford film, a war film set the 1900s. It's on the same shelf as Gallipoli, which is also one of my favorite movies of all time. Absolutely terrific courtroom drama, superb acting, just jaw-droppingly shot. Fantastic movies, all of them.
Oh, I've got a list now because those look great, and I love that they're also, see, this is the thing. I mean, this is Letter Never Sent. Can you find that anywhere? Streaming a movie like that, maybe Criterion channel.
Maybe on Criterion channel, I don't know, but like you're not going to get that on Apple Movies. Mate One, you're not going to get. I don't think you're going to get In the Mood for Love. I don't know if you can get Breaker Morant that way, but this is why physical media is so important.
Yeah,
and by the way, those transfers for all those movies, jaw-dropping, absolutely phenomenal.
I'm gonna have to add them to my wish list for the next Criterion sale, because those have not come across my radar in years of buying from Criterion. So that I love getting recommended. I mean, those both sound like they're right up my alley. And so the Australian one was Breaker Moran.
It's
a ton of great Australian. So I'm finding out about this because, and I give them credit, like Umbrella and Via Vision over in Australia, like all of a sudden, I guess it's a new business plan. Like they've started targeting global collectors and really making everything region free. And I mean, I was just one set I was going to bring up physical media wise is this Walter Hill box set that they just sent out, because this is a blind spot for me. And they actually told me over there, based on my tastes, that they wanted to send this to me to watch because they thought it would be right up my alley. And this is, I mean, stuff like this is just, you'd never see any of these movies on those platforms. And from everything I've heard, I haven't dove in yet. It literally came like yesterday, so I wanted to show it off, but just fantastic stuff. And yeah, I mean, and there's just so much lost cinema out there that's just like incredible. I mean, one movie that I was going to recommend, and you got me thinking about it with the Soviet stuff, but everybody's been, I mean, this is also a very timely movie given what's going on in Ukraine and everything, but, and it's a hard recommendation because this is not an easy movie to watch, but Come and See.
That's a brutal one.
I mean, brutal. But it's so, I mean, if you watch that movie and you don't have a completely different outlook on just war and what it does to people, and great, like there are great war movies. I love Saving Private Ryan and I love Hacksaw Ridge and All Quiet on the Western Front that came out last year was fantastic. And like that's, but nothing touches that level. I mean, other than maybe the act of killing made me feel a certain way,
right,
like Come and See does. It's just another, you're like, humanity is just horrific. And why do we keep doing this to each other? And it keeps happening and history repeats itself and it's happening right now as we speak. And that movie, I mean, that's another Criterion excellent release that you're not going to be able to find anywhere. It's not a movie that Netflix probably wants to put in their algorithm.
Exactly. If you're going down that route, I want to throw just one last movie out.
Yeah, go for it.
Which is called The Battle of Algiers from 1966. Absolutely astounding movie. And I love the point of view of that movie. I love who the filmmakers were making that movie, that the heroes and the people that we're following are the Muslims who are being oppressed by the French regime. It's all shot. It feels very grounded. They use actual footage from the uprising. It's handheld, incredible acting and filmmaking. And it's if people have not seen that movie, I watch that movie once a year. I think it's an incredible film.
Yeah, no, that's another great Criterion release.
Yes.
I don't think Netflix is serving up to you anytime soon.
No, I don't think so either.
That stuff's a little too heavy for any of those platforms, but they're great watches that everybody, if everybody watched this type of stuff, I think we'd all get along a little bit better. It brings a little bit of humanity back out in you and you go, you know, and that's a hard watch. I wouldn't recommend like, hey, Friday night, date night, let's put on Battle of Algiers or Come and See, but like, I think you should watch them. Another one
I was going to say is we should not only watch things that make us comfortable. We have to make ourselves uncomfortable.
That's a major reason how I got so deep into horror movies in particular is because I was like, I actually kind of like that feeling of being uncomfortable and being challenged and being, you know, there's adrenaline rush to it too, but a lot of these movies, even the B ones, the B movies that nobody thinks much of, there's a reason they were made. There's themes in there. You see where people are coming from. There's a mindset. And that was one I wanted to mention was the Devonsville Terror, which I discovered through Vinegar Syndrome.
Yeah.
Actually discovered through John Squires from Bloody Disgusting tweeting about it. And then I discovered Vinegar Syndrome was the only way to get it. So I bought it and I was like, this movie is, it's a B movie. It's got some cheesy stuff. It's cheap. First of all, it's Donald Pleasance. I'm a Halloween guy. I was in love with that. But it has these themes of like the way that they're dealing. It's this town full of angry old good old boy men and these women come into town from the outside and they're just persecuted and torn down, and they go back to the history of this town and that they had these, you know, basically Salem witch trial type stuff happened 300 years ago, and you know, it's just kind of this cool you know, this happened 300 years ago, but you know what, it's happening right now today too. We're not calling it the same thing, but this type of stuff is still happening to women in these small towns or in these places or in the United States of America as a whole. And that movie had some real themes. I mean, if you just watch it surface level, yeah, you're going to see a kind of cheesy B movie about witches, but there's something a lot deeper to that. And that those are the kind of movies that get me thinking. Like I'll watch Scream and the big budget stuff and I love it and it's fun. But like you said, we mentioned with like streaming content, when it's done and you don't think about it anymore.
Right.
And these are the types of movies that I still think about. I watched that movie 6 months ago and I'm still talking about it, thinking about it, recommending it to people because I was like, something just stuck with me. I don't know what it was, what it is. It stuck with me. I got the message and I think other people need that. And that's what I love in a movie.
B movies are not bad movies. They're just low budget movies. Like right. I just showed people this weekend, They Live, because that is so like good. One of my favorite John Carpenter movies. And it is so of the moment, you know, Night of the Living Dead. There's a reason why the main character is an African American vet, you know, in a town of all white people and zombies are attacking the house. There's social messages that they wouldn't be able to make in a big budget movie. So they make a small budget movie and they're important. And they last forever and they're great.
And that's the part that blows my mind about the complaints you get online. And I don't even want to go down this rabbit hole, but like there has been this commentary since you could pick a camera up and take a moving picture. Mm-hmm. This is what people have used it for. And I totally understand that sometimes, it when it's forced and it's bad, it can be bad, but that doesn't mean that all of it's bad.
Yeah.
This has always been happening. And these are some of these same people who complain about stuff that's being made today would go back and love Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they're just blind. They just see zombie movie, cool zombie movie.
Right.
And you don't see why certain choices were made. Like, there's media literacy there and understanding, diving a little deeper than surface level. But yeah, I mean, that's the kind of stuff I'm excited to go check. I got to go buy these movies you recommended because I'm always looking for stuff like that. And I'm working on some stuff right now, but I really want to put these thoughts down into like a book somewhere
where
are these hidden gems that are out there. And yeah, maybe the most hardcore of the hardcore movie fan knows them, but I just want to get this stuff into the hands of like people my age. Cause I was so big. I mean, go back 10 years ago and I would tell you my favorite movie is Training Day. And I'm like, still a fun, great movie that I love with Denzel, but like, it's not my favorite movie anymore.
Right.
I didn't know any better. It's a lot of fun and I love watching it, but I didn't know any better and I hadn't seen anything. And it reminds me of like, I worked in a high school in like 2014 whenever American Sniper came out. Uh-huh. And I remember I was like a teacher's aide and I was in an English class and the guy asked, you know, write down your favorite movie. And I think 90% of the boys in the class wrote American Sniper. And I was like, you guys need to watch like recency bias. I get, that movie's fine, but watch anything. There's no way that can be the favorite movie of 90% of the 16-year-old boys in this class, because then we have an issue. We need to see more. You need to get out of your bubble. You need to have a wider view of the world. You need to watch stuff from Hong Kong and from Australia and from Africa and from anywhere in Europe and South America and all this great stuff that's being made outside of just the major players. Because, you know, people will call you like, they'll call me a film geek or whatever. And like, I get it, but sit down and watch these. And I think you'll change your mind about what a film. I think I'm just finding things that are really good that more people should talk about, which is a ton of fun.
And at the very least, your world expands a little bit.
True. Through TV shows and movies, my worldview has expanded so much further. And I mean, it's anything I watch. 5 years ago, I would have never watched RuPaul's Drag Race.
Right.
I watch every season now. And my worldview is, I'm like, oh, there's no boogeymen here.
No,
this is not what people want to make it out to be. These are entertainers. Why don't more people love these people? They're hilarious. They're fun. Like, my worldview has opened up. Yeah. And I'm like, this is how everybody should be.
Yes.
And yeah, you have to get outside of that. And I had people, you know, when I did my Barbie review, as you can imagine, the comments were what the comments were, but somebody said, oh, you know, give your man card, 'cause you went to see Barbie. And I said to him, you know what? You can have mine, 'cause it feels like you need an extra with all of your insecurities. it is so crazy, because if you love movies truly, then you have to have a wider worldview, or you don't truly love movie. You love this. You love the blinders on. You love what you love. You don't love movies because you couldn't hate stuff like this if you did.
And in conclusion, I will say your tastes also change the more you watch.
Oh,
so like when I was younger in film school, I hated Ozu movies. Now I watch movies like Late Spring and Early Summer and Tokyo Story, and I bawl and I weep and I'm like, I want to live in this world. And when I was younger and dumber, I just didn't get it. And now my world is bigger and I understand emotions more, and I want to see a Japanese culture move in a slow, thoughtful family drama in a way that I did not want to when I wanted everything to be Die Hard. So
absolutely. You know? I'm with you. Yeah. I'm with you. Yeah. Trust me, there's a time and a place for Die Hard and Con Air.
Oh yeah. No, it's one of my favorite movies. Love it.
Commando and Face Off and all that stuff. Yeah. I love that stuff as much as the next guy, but yeah, every now and then I go, you know what? I want to watch something that makes me think. And it does make you, honestly, it makes you a better person. It sounds so cheesy to say, but it will genuinely make you a better person if you just even just go outside of your comfort zone a tiny, tiny bit outside of something you don't normally watch. And that's what's amazing about
them. Yeah. And thank you for your channel for doing that. I really appreciate it. You know, you continue to push me to do that. And I love how you promote good, thoughtful stuff and thoughtful discussion. So it's great.
This is why I have these discussions too. I have learned more doing 40 some odd episodes of my podcast and talking to people and getting recommendations than I could have ever learned on my own. So I've got a few more here to go grab from you. Right. So I appreciate that.
You got it.
But yeah, I appreciate the insight, candor, just transparency that you gave here. I think this is important for people to understand. You know, whether they get it from my channel or they get it from somewhere else, we've got plenty of people here who probably don't fully understand what's going on right now and how it can affect them. And their entertainment, very much so, if this does not get fixed. We're going to be a sad, sad bunch if this does not resolve in the right way. So it's an important thing. And, you know, I wish you all the best of luck out there and stay strong, keep going. I think I'm making my way out about a month from now. So
we'll probably be on that line. Anyone who wants to come down and march with us.
I will keep you posted. I hope it's done and resolved by then with something that is good for everybody. Yeah. I don't want a resolution that feels cheap. So hopefully you get what you're all fighting for and keep up the good fight, because it's an important one.
Thank you, man. Really appreciate it. Keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you.
And talk to you soon. All right. Thanks.
All right, guys, that was my interview with Ted. I think you'll find that it was pretty interesting. I learned a lot. Ted has a very unique perspective on the strike that, you know, I don't think a lot of other people do or have been sharing. Ted's been very open to sharing on social media, and he was so gracious to step onto the channel here and share here. So appreciate his thoughts, his insights. And, you know, I will say we recorded this a couple weeks back. By the time this posts, this was recorded a couple weeks ago, and we paused it for a little bit because it looked like there might be some movement. And if there was going to be movement, you know, we weren't going to post this. But there was recent news. The WGA got an email, you know, literally very recently, like the day that I'm recording this outro, that, you know, the studio's offer was kind of a joke. It's been sort of just a PR thing, just so they can say they made an offer. You know, they talk about how great they are. It was a very interesting email that went out, and you've probably seen it online by this point. But, you know, unfortunately, I think this thing has a long way to go. You know, I wish Ted and all of the writers all of the best, because I know it's not easy to go on strike. They're not making money right now. You know, they have rents to pay. They got food to eat. They got families to feed. Like, this is tough. And the same for a lot of the working actors out there. It's very difficult. And if you wanted a little bit of an actor's perspective, this was pre-strike. But I did talk to actor Dominic Burgess, who's very much like a working actor, guest actor, whatever you would call him. And, you know, he's on many different shows. We had a really good podcast episode together. He's also a physical media collector and lover, like Ted is. So if you want a sort of actor's perspective, we did talk about residuals and stuff way before the strike. So it was kind of like we were almost, you know, thinking about this stuff before it happened. So check that episode out. It's on YouTube. It's on the audio podcast. But appreciate you guys watching or listening. Hope you have a great rest of your day. Stay safe. Stay healthy out there. Good luck to the WGA and SAG-AFTRA. And I'll talk to you all soon.
Coming soon. Be sure to subscribe to the Films at Home podcast using your favorite app so you don't miss another episode. While you're there, don't forget to rate and review this podcast, which helps us out tremendously. You can also help support us by watching our short-form content over on YouTube and TikTok by searching Films at Home. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @films_at_home. The intro and outro were created by Elon Osborne. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.